Hi, I'm Brian Nash, the host of the How We Got Here podcast. Welcome to episode 7, Why You and Your Family Matters to Me Now and in 1911. Now this episode I'm doing something a little different. There'll be no long form conversation with a guest today, but rather I'm going to take the time to talk to you, my listeners, directly. And then stick around to the end when I dive into the 1911 Canadian Census in part 3 of my series on using the Canadian Census in genealogy.
Welcome to How We Got Here, a genealogy podcast hosted by Brian Nash, exploring the tools, tips, and resources for genealogists from Atlantic Canada and family historians from around the globe who are researching their ancestors from Atlantic Canada. Every family has a story, so stick around as Brian and his guests share the unique family stories that help shape the history and culture of Atlantic Canada.
Welcome back. Like I said from the top, I'm doing something a little different in episode 7. So episode 6 was a milestone in that when I first started this podcast, my goal was to do this for 3 months and see how it goes and examine what changes may or may not need to be made and figure out how to implement them. And this week, I'm wanting to let you, my listeners, know what my thoughts are as well as share some of your feedback to me. So the only guest today is you, so I invite you to grab a coffee, a wee spot of tea, or even better, a beer or a glass of whiskey. It's your choice. Just promise me if you're listening to this in the car, please stick with the tea or coffee. So the first thing I've been really wanting to do is I just want to thank you for sitting down with me, and I'm glad you're able to drop by. I want to thank you for taking the time to, over the last 6 episodes, to get to know me better and the time you've spent with me and my guest. It has definitely been appreciated. And thanks for listening to me, even when the conversation can be awfully one-sided. It's hard to believe it's been almost 5 months since I uploaded my first trailer and almost 4 months since my first episode, Beginnings, was put online. We met Larry and Linda Villanova as they shared their story about how they were able to dig into their family history of their mother who was placed in Halifax's St. Paul's Home for Girls Orphanage in 1939. And we've made quite a few journeys since then, from finding a purpose in our genealogy to learning about the Ulster Scots and the Highland Clearances and to talking with a guest, a fellow podcaster, about recently unknown Acadian roots. And then in my last episode, having Mags Golden come on and talk about understanding DNA as a genealogist. You've shared the ride, and I've talked a little about my own family roots and my own research along the way. When I started this journey, I thought I would be lucky to have 10 or 20 listeners at most, and I'm now approaching 1,000. So I want to thank you all. You are part of my success. I started the podcast because I had something to say and something to share, and because I wanted to help others understand the importance of genealogy and how their family histories play a part in shaping Atlantic Canada into what it is today. And I hope I've been able to accomplish that. One of the things that I'm looking to change is sort of my focus, moving it away from a little broader than just Atlantic Canada, though I still want to make that the main purpose, but just I found that I've had a lot of listeners from around the world that are dropping in and listening. So there's lots of things that they've mentioned in comments on different Facebook groups or on my webpage or through email, that I'm going to look to, you know, while I'm sharing this, stories of Atlantic Canadians, that's still something that's really important to me. I also want to bring in a broader group of guests and to just give more perspective on genealogy and create a better show. So that's something that I'm hoping to begin soon. And I'm hoping that you'll stick with me. I promise I'm still gonna talk about Atlantic Canada. That's still where my heart is. And it's still I still have that goal of, you know, understand, helping people to hear the stories of our ancestors that really made our culture in Atlantic Canada what it is. I also want to, even within the Atlantic Canada, I'm trying to bring to a larger variety of guests from our different regions. And I want to hear from you about what type of guests you would like to see. If you have a suggestion, or if you think you'd like to come on my podcast and share your history, your family story, or even just your journey into the genealogy, go to my website, www.howwegothere.ca, or follow me on Twitter and comment at howwegothere, the number 2 is how you can find me on Twitter. So yeah, I really do enjoy hearing from you guys. A lot of people have reached out through my Facebook page, my Twitter account, through the website. And I just wanted to just thank you guys for taking that time. It's nice to know that you guys are listening. And I just want to talk a little bit about some of the things that I'm going to do. Like I said, I'm still wanting to concentrate this podcast on Atlantic Canada and the stories of Atlantic Canadians and their journeys of their ancestors. But I'm also doing a few other things. I've recently got on YouTube and I've been doing some videos where I'm exploring things in a little more detail and a little more visually where needed. And I also do some fun things on Twitter. We'll just get to give you a chance to get to know me a little bit better, and my personality comes out, I think. Might be a good thing depending on your taste, I guess. The other thing I'm starting on Twitter is starting on YouTube is a new YouTube channel besides the one for my podcast. It's, and I'm really excited about it. It's called 10 Minute Genealogy, where I'm going to be inviting other genealogists that are on YouTube, and myself, we're going to be sharing short how-to videos on different aspects of genealogy for the newcomer, for the person that's interested in just getting started, or the person that's been doing genealogy for a while but is wanting to explore different aspects of it. So that's it's up there now. There's not really any content yet. It's just in the development stage, but by the end of February there should be a few more videos up there released. So I invite you to go to that. It's simply called 10 Minute Genealogy. 10 is the number 10. I'm those are a couple of things I'm excited about. I'm excited about a couple future guests coming up, and one of the things that I'm really excited about is St. Patrick's Day. St. Patrick's Day is always a good time for anybody who has any claim of Irish, or those people who don't. So what I'm going to be doing is that I'm going to have a special episode on St. Patrick's Day dedicated to Irish ancestry in Atlantic Canada. So if you you'd like to participate, you have some Irish ancestors or a story of how your family came over from Ireland, again, reach out to me. I like hearing from you. I really appreciate it. I appreciate the comments I get and all the feedback. I'm wanting to make this podcast one that you, my listener, wants to listen to, so I really do appreciate it. Like I said, this show's a much shorter show. It's a kind of an abridged show today. And I just really wanted to just take that time to to have a break from my normal production, but also just let you guys know that I really appreciate you. I want to hear from you. I want your ideas. I want your input. And, you know, so take your time and when you're searching on the internet, just make sure you drop by my website, my Facebook page, and let me know what you think of this and what you think of past episodes as well. I'm really willing to try to make this, like I said, something that you, my listener, wants to hear. That being said, I'm thinking in a few episodes I will actually have a mailbag episode where I'll be addressing the specific questions from my audience. I've gotten a few ready already today, so there are questions that I'm going to be digging into. So thank you very much, and you know, I appreciate you listening. Like I said, today's a little bit of an abridged one, so right after the next little break there, I'm going to start talking about the 1911 census and how it's useful to us as genealogists. So, part three of my look at the Canadian census, I'm going to be looking at the 1911 census. As I mentioned before, like all things in genealogy, we start with the most recent and let's work our way back. So, the 1911 census was conducted on June 1st, 1911. As you remember in the last one, I mentioned the date. In May for the 1921, I mentioned the Dominion, the Commonwealth Conference on Statistics. Well, that didn't take effect into there, so this wasn't in the period. So basically, the date, like I said, all censuses are a snapshot of one day, and it's a picture of what's happening on that day, is June 1st. In that, all reports actually had to be returned by February 26, 1912. A lot of the information is very similar to the 1921. We have the basic information of the... still in the 1911, they were collecting the names of the individuals, the relationships to the head of house. They were conducting the year of immigration, their nationality. One thing it didn't have, which can be useful to genealogists, as I said, that the 1921 had, it did not have their parents' country of birth or province of birth. So it also had a lot of other information. There was a whole bunch of different schedules, which are different questions for different things, whether they be dairy farms, different agricultural questions. There is a lot more if you want to go into the detail. But again, we're looking more at the individual person. There's some great summaries out there that will give you a good picture of what was going on in a country or a region. Again, these are available on the government publications website. So take a look at those, but don't, as a genealogist, it's good to know that information in a general aspect. We don't really need to dig into it. There is some stuff on the 1911 that wasn't included in the 1921. When we look at the breakdown of the different columns, like I said, it had all that general personal information, and it got some little more detailed information on the profession or trade of the individual they were asking. There's a series of codes. Again, I'm going to post the government link to the 1911 census on my show notes. It's really good to refer to that. It gives you a little more detail of what the different columns mean. But there's and in this actually, on the parts on professions and trades, they have different codes that mean different things. Basically, industry type codes that also go down to a second part of that. They have sort of where I want to say their ranking or what what they did within the profession. And then there's also a part that refers to a specific trade. So it's quite interesting, especially since even if you look at it, they have some the way they sort of break down military trades. Has some information about their employer, if they were an employer or if they were an employee. Has a whole bunch of things about their wages, how many weeks they were employed, what kind of wages they had in the year. They were just collecting the information on the wages from the chief occupation and also ones that come from others. So if you were a farmer, but you maybe were also at this point milling some wood, but farming was your primary trade, you'd have that. And if you were selling wood on the side, that would be separate. There's information about insurances. There's information about the education and language of anybody that's over 5 years. Again, it's basically literacy. Can you read? Can you write? What languages can you speak? This does have a really interesting section on infirmities. And it's really, I think it's kind of interesting. They have a couple different classes. And there's 41 columns in this, but in the whole census, but the last few, they have a spot that you check off if you're blind. One, if you're deaf and dumb. Now, the next two I found kind of amusing. They have a column that if you're crazy or a lunatic, which is column 40. But column 41, and I'm just trying to figure out what the difference is between column 40, which is crazy or lunatic, or column 41, which is idiotic or silly. So I don't know if that's a matter of diagnosis, but it's kind of interesting. Again, it does have a lot of really different personal facts that you can grab from there. One of the really interesting things with the 1911 census is this is the last census before World War I. So there's going to be people that you're going to find in those records that you're going to not find in later records because they have they died during the war. This is actually one thing where a comparison of the different censuses can come really in handy. For instance, you're looking at a relative and you see that they have a son in 1911. In the 1921 census, that son's no longer living with them. It could be that they have moved, but if you're still searching, you still can't find any record of that person. It might be a clue if they're, you know, if in 1911 they were anywhere, you know, from, well, 14 years of age and older, that they, well, yeah, actually 11 years of age and older, you might want to check the government archives for war records. If you've lost them in the 1921 census and you have no records intervening, it might direct you to that. The one thing I did mention about, the other thing about 1921 census, just going back to that I didn't mention last time is, but again, this is because it's a comparison. There's also the Spanish flu of 1918, and that went over for a few years. There was recurring waves of it, as we use the term now. So it's also a spot where you can find those relatives that are missing and might give you a clue to what happened, and direct you maybe to where to start the search for other records. So the 1911 census is quite interesting. It's the first census of, I want to say, Canada as it is a modern, as it is sort of, we'd recognize it, Canada without Newfoundland. This one would have all the prairie provinces, because Alberta and Saskatchewan joined in 1905, so they're included for the first time, and their information is as well. Though they did have an interim census with Alberta and Saskatchewan in 1905, I believe, or 1906, where they did do a census for them, but this would be the first one that's sort of more inclusive and give you a picture of, like I said, what we sort of recognize as Canada, without Newfoundland, of course, because they didn't join to 1949. So, yeah, at the 1911 census, again, really, really great information. The things where it's really strong on are the trades, and giving you more detail about that. It's weak in the sense that you don't have that, the parents' country of origin, place of origin, which is something really handy in the 1921 census, because it can give you that information to start looking back. With all the censuses, I find they're really great, as I mentioned before, so for sort of filling out those lateral lines and digging into relatives. Often, I know as genealogists, we go gung-ho on that straight line back from us. We go to our parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, and we never really explore our granduncles, our great-granduncles and grandaunts. And I mean, depending on what you're wanting, you don't have to necessarily go into as much detail, but where it comes in handy as a genealogist for me, for using this census and any of the other ones, is when you're finding that information, when you're finding the brothers and sisters, if you can actually trace their lines down, you might find there's other people in the family, cousins, that you might be able to make those connections with. So, and they might have the information you're looking on, because your great-grandmother might, or great-great-grandmother might also be their great-great-grandmother, or even their great-grandmother. So they might have information going past that you don't have. It might direct you into other new sources. And that's one of the big benefits of the census, is when it has these family relationships, you can dig in and you can start searching for other people. Those lateral lines are important, like I said, because they can lead you to other people that are doing the research you're doing as well. And, you know, when you find those relatives, I mean, always check sources. I can't say enough, no matter what you're doing, don't take a source as that you're quoting from somebody else as legitimate until you check it out yourself. That being said, it can give you that point when you find those relatives and you're making those connections and you're seeing what sources they use. It can point you into the right direction, so you can verify their source. And it's really good. And your relatives could verify yours as well. I've had times where I've done some research and a cousin's done different. We've had a distant cousin, and we've been able to connect, and we're at a conflict at a certain point, and we've sort of been able to bounce sources back and forth to try to figure out which is the legitimate one, that we are now talking about the same relative, going back farther. So, again, I want to say censuses, use them. Use them, and again, take them with a grain of salt always, because these are just the records as they have are being reported. You don't know. It doesn't always record who's the person actually contributing the information. There are still those, they still had enumerators. They still do today, but now a lot of it is you fill out the own form, your own forms, and send it in. Then they still had somebody going door to door and asking you the question. So they were filling out the forms. They're humans. They make mistakes. They're going to make mistakes in spelling. They're going to make mistakes in ages. They might not have talked to your relative, but they talked to their neighbor. This is particularly in urban areas. They talk to your next door neighbor. Your next door neighbor, their next door neighbor, your relative, might know you have the kids. They might know their approximate ages, but sometimes they might, well, yeah, Jane, they have a daughter, Jane. She's 8 or 9. They might not know. They might know what they look like. They might not know that Jane, her real name is Maria. Those type of things. So you need the, they might not know how Jane was spelled. Possibly Jane was spelled J-A-Y-N-E for some reason. Or even your last name, they might mix up a Mick for a Mac. They might be using a name that sounds familiar to them, but it's not your actual a name. For instance, Johansson, Johnson is a good example. That there might be that difference. You talk to somebody of Scandinavian origin, it's Johansson. But if they have an English neighbor, they might just refer to them as the Johnsons. There could be mistakes in spelling. So always remember to double check those things. Think like the person who would have been listening if there's a suggested name differences that you've probably come across before. Make sure you're investigating those when you're doing your searches. Also, don't just look at your relatives. Look at their neighborhood. Look at the people around them. If you have the time, and I've done this, I've made a spreadsheet with the information on my different ancestors and where I have their relatives. It's really come in handy because I've been able to then, when I find somebody has married into the family, I could actually find them in the previous census because I've already had them tracked. This again is more with my lateral lines when I've been finding things, but I've found a grand uncle or a great uncle who married a woman in the community. I recognize that name from having looked at that, because often, remember, people didn't travel as much. You're going to be marrying your neighbors. These are the people you grew up with. Even today, we still generally marry within our communities. A lot of times they're larger, but particularly back then, smaller communities, you're more likely to find that. So it can get you those sources that you need and make it easier for you, because you might already have that information if you've taken the time to pay attention to what's in there, record it somehow. Like I said, I use a spreadsheet method where I can actually take the information from the Ancestry site, because they have, on some of the years of the census, is some really good, and depending which one, some really good indexes where you can actually just easily convert into a spreadsheet. And I just do a spreadsheet because it's easier to, it's already sorted in tabs with the different columns and the different rows for the different individuals. And it makes it easy to search. So if I see a name that I recognize, I can then go and look at and find, oh, I did find that person listed in the 1911 census. They were 8 years old at that time. And so now I have maybe my grand aunt another relative that I had married into the family. I've been able to find them and have a record on them and place them in that family tree. So again, if I'm looking for those relatives, those cousins that might also be doing family research, I can find them. Also, it comes in handy when you're doing DNA, because you become familiar with different names, and you'll recognize when you're doing surnames, you might recognize names that you're related to, and especially with surnames, you might recognize that's from that area, so there might be some commonality. It's really helpful when you're trying to create those clusters, having this information. Always having as much information as you can is helpful. What you do with that information, how you use it, like I said, it's going to depend on your purpose and where you're driven. If you're doing that straight line, having those lateral things are still good to know. You might not go into as much detail creating biographies for all those people, but if you can place them in your family chart at some place, it's going to help you because there's more people than you know that are doing research, and they're doing research on your family because it's their family, and it's great to make those connections, and using the information from the census is a great way to do that. Anyways, I'd like to thank you today for listening to this very abridged edition of my podcast. It's going out a day late. I do apologize. I had recorded some, and I had an issue with my recording of my first section. It's a might have noticed. I'm not completely happy with it because it was kind of rushed. I did have a much more in-depth first section, but having issues with that original recording, I went through it very quickly. So I do apologize for that, and I invite you back in 2 weeks' time, every second Wednesday. Check out my podcast. It's right here. Make sure you subscribe so you know when it's coming out. Also, check out my website. Check out my YouTube page, and you can find me on Twitter and on Facebook. You have a great day, and keep searching for your relatives.
Thank you for listening to this episode of How We Got Here. Make sure you check out the show notes for more information about today's topic and guests. How We Got Here is hosted and produced by Brian Nash. Title music from Tribute to O'Carolan by Luna Bajowski.